Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Only the cream of the crop pick up Champions League medals. Jonathan Greening's got one. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Matt, Joe Malloy with you this evening. So Serbia against Ireland on Wednesday. We'll have live commentary for you here on Off the Ball. It's a 7:45 kickoff, the first step on the road to World Cup 2022. It'll be followed by Saturday. It's Luxembourg in Dublin. And then the following Tuesday, which is tomorrow week, we'll have Qatar against Ireland in a friendly. So Ireland's group, lest you need reminding, Group A, it has Portugal, it has Serbia, it has Azerbaijan, and it has Luxembourg. Now, the Serbian manager, former Yugoslav captain Dragan Stojkovic, it's his first game in charge. He's been speaking about the Ireland team and how he sees things going. He says, this is a difficult group. I'm not so crazy as to say our opponents, Ireland, have no clue. They do. Ireland can be uncomfortable to play against, but I can't accept that they can play better than us. Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent. I would think old Dragon thinks they're in with a chance on Wednesday.
So, Joe, I mean, they've got a double header, you see. So it's Portugal up next as well. I've been sort of in the Irish zone for the whole preparations of this game. So I've sort of been doing a little listening to some Serbian stuff to see what they're variously saying. And the tone of the discussion is in line with sort of that there. It's like, so they're looking at a week with like Ireland at home and then Portugal at home. And very fearful of Portugal. Not so much. not so fearful of Ireland. So,
yeah.
Pin that stuff on the dressing room wall, you know. Pin those quotes up somewhere where we can see them. Get at them.
In fairness, Dragon is saying we don't have no clue. He's saying we have some clue. So I think, you know.
Well, that's qualified praise, isn't it, really?
It is,
you know,
yeah.
We'll take that. Not in Ireland, not clueless, says Serbia manager.
The injury list ever expanding for Stephen Kenny. So Quevin Kelleher added to it. Darren Randolph obviously on it. Mark Travers, who's played twice for Ireland against New Zealand and Bulgaria in friendlies back in 2019. And now likely to start. So the likes of James McCarthy gone. John Egan gone. Conor Hourihan gone as well now. Callum O'Dowda, Kevin Long. And interestingly, James McLean, who's been adamant really all the way along, Dan, that he will be fit. Michael O'Neill, his manager at Stoke, says, well, I don't think he'll be fit. I'm kind of surprised he's in the squad, to be honest. So that's about where we are. Five of those involved in maybe Ireland's best performance under Kenny against Slovakia and presumably what he sees as his best team. Five of those out injured.
Yeah, no, the attrition rate from that game has been high. Losing Conor Hourihan at the weekend is brutal, really, just because he's one of those who actually has been playing reasonably well, you know, at Swansea since he's gone on loan. He's Matt Sharp, and you know, the list of sort of form players is small. Aaron Connolly has made it. He was ruled out at one stage, or seemed to be out of the equation at one stage. He would have been in the team for Slovakia if it wasn't for flight issues, which we don't need to go back over. Everyone COVID free today, by the way. That's the good news, you know. But unfortunately, they haven't avoided injuries. So, I mean, yeah, like the Kelleher situation would have been interesting to see him play for Randolph. Now Travers gets dropped in there. Although he has been dropped in before to a big Premier League game with fans there for Bournemouth against Spurs, and he handled it. So, you know, it's not necessarily the most nerve-wracking thing he'll face playing in closed doors, albeit, you know, the nation is watching. But yeah, there is obviously, listen, there's been a litany of issues. You can't really avoid the fact that there's been issues, and certainly I'd say in January, if you'd had one discussion about this game, in fact we had loads of discussions probably about this game in some shape or form, and probably would have said countless times, just once they can avoid injuries or mishaps in the build up to it. And I'd say if you sat down and worked out a plan in January for how you might approach this game, I'm sure some of those players you mentioned there, I mean I'm certain some of those players you mentioned there would have been very much central to it. So they're working off a narrow enough time frame to try and get this right. And even between the time that the squad was named, like Stephen Kenny left it very late to name the squad. He named it on Thursday. I think that was to avoid the situation where you're sort of calling in players at the last minute. But I'd say even then, his likely 11 has obviously been changed by weekend events.
Mm. Given that the pre-Christmas period consisted of 7 games without a goal, probably not what everybody wants to hear, but Stephen Kenny had bite your hand off for a nil-all draw now, beat Luxembourg and get out of here with 4 points. That's what we're looking at, isn't it?
Oh, listen, yeah, I think so. And no matter what he says, and you know, it wouldn't be in his mindset to go looking for a nil-all draw, but if that happened to be a consequence of what happened, if you, as Mick McCarthy would say, you know, if you offered me that now, you know, if you offered him nil-all and say you don't have to go there, for all that, the official answer, I think, would be, of course, no, you know, we believe we can win. We want to go and win. That would be the answer. Pragmatically, of course, they'd take that, you know. I think very much so, and get the job done against Luxembourg, which, interestingly, there seems to be a bit of respect for them. Even listening to the Serbs, my Serbian chat I was listening to earlier on, you know, Luxembourg are improving. So maybe it's not a foregone conclusion. Ireland just strolled to the Aviva and take those points on Saturday. Mm. So I think, yeah, if you're offered 4 points and then, weirdly, the pattern, the flow of this group, is that you take your 4 points if you can get them, and then you wait 6 months, 5.5 months until the next games. Mm. So it's like you try and put this window into like a pattern, you know, like there's an improvement, there's momentum and all this, but I mean, it's 5 months, 6 months till the next games.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, all the players could be in completely different positions. Like, now, then you do have a situation where, you know, September, October, November, you have a serious run of games. So, in some respects, like, does that back up the view that you approach these games in isolation, do what you have to do to get through it, and then try and be in a good place, a better place come the autumn to really hit that finishing stretch with a bit of a, you know, something coherent that's building towards something. It's a tough one. It's really tough.
On the who's going to score a goal situation, just looking at where we are, and I should have added Adam Eder to the list of injuries as well.
Yes, yeah.
Callum Robinson is in the squad of West Brom, obviously. Aaron Connolly in, Shane Long, James Collins of Luton Town, and Troy Parrott's in there as well of Ipswich Town at the moment, though I think Stephen Kenny said he was unlikely to be pitched in, Troy Parrott. Just, I was looking, Dan, pre-show, respective form lines. Aaron Connolly, his last game was 4 weeks ago, so he won't be razor sharp. He has scored twice this season against Wolves and Newcastle. So 2 goals in 18 games for Connolly. Ronan Curtis, one of our top scorers at club level, although it is for Portsmouth in League One, he has scored 10 in 42. Although for Ronan Curtis, across his last 22 games, 2 goals. Callum Robinson, back in September when he scored 2 at Stamford Bridge, we thought, goodness me, this is great, he might kick on. Although his last Premier League appearance, let alone goal, his last Premier League appearance was the 2nd of February. James Collins of Luton, he did play at the weekend. His last goal was February. He has scored 1 in 19. And then Shane Long at Bournemouth at the moment, he scored 2 goals in February, which kind of, from an Irish perspective, almost puts him in form. The point is, of course, across the next, how many games in this group? 5 teams, 8 games. Across 8 games, these kind of 2 goals in 22, 1 goal in 19. You know, we're going to need somebody to catch fire a little bit by comparison with the form they're showing at club level.
Yeah, no, listen, you've laid it out pretty well there, you know, and this is the problem. Like, in, you know, the Serbs are trying to figure out if they can accommodate Vlahovic. Fiorentina, he's 21 years of age, scored 12 goals in Serie A this season. Not necessarily even going to sure he's going to play. So that, you know, that just puts it in context. Mitrovic as well is, you know, recognisable Premier League striker. They're not sure he'll even be picked for this game. So, but that's where we're at. I mean, listen, there are probably mitigating factors with some of those people. You know, Robinson was having a reasonable season. Maybe the big Sam switch relegation battle hasn't suited him. He did play quite well for Ireland in Slovakia. That's the last time he played. He's missed the 5 games since then. Aaron Connolly has played 1 out of the last 6 games for Ireland too. And listen, he's had one or two disciplinary issues at Brighton and a little injury. You know, prior to that, he was at least involved regularly at Premier League level. You know, he wasn't taking chances, but he has this ability to get into positions and be involved and be, you know, like, he just, Aaron Connolly is a sort of a, he has a sort of thing about him, you know, that he, when he plays in games, he tends to be involved in moments. You know, we've even seen that with Ireland. Now, his ability to convert them has been an issue. But there are, like, if you want to try and be positive about it, and probably should really try and be somewhat positive about it, not all completely doom and gloom, like, there are players there who can, like, they are sort of streaky, sparky players, you know. That's maybe been a feature, a problem with their careers. Even, you know, you can throw Shane Long into that mix as well. And perhaps in some cases, if they're having a situation at club level where things haven't been going well, or maybe not happy with their manager, or they're not in the good books, or whatever it might be, you know, maybe coming away for a couple of days just sort of, you know, ignites them, you know. And like, there have been times this season, you know, where, say, Robinson and Connolly have looked like good players. It's been a while since that's happened, but they have at Premier League level, like, put in good performances, you know. And the hope is that in some way, you know, this change of scenery can help them. I think the problem, though, is that it's actually trying to figure out how they might actually fit into a side, like, where they actually go in there. Like, I think there probably would have been a view a while back that Collins would be the player who would be, James Collins would be the player that would be the central striker, you know, a sort of an experienced player, pretty match fit, albeit he's been on the bench recently. Yes, he's not dynamic. Not necessarily the most sort of mobile sort of player that, in the sense that he'll stretch opposition, but he can sort of, he's a bit of presence about, and he can bring other players into it. I just wonder now, though, is he vulnerable just because he hasn't had a great run, and is the temptation that you actually try someone like an Aaron Connolly or a Robinson through the middle, which is different to the type of central player Ireland have played in that area, if you know what I mean. You're sort of playing without a real presence. It's more so their movement and their pace or trickery or whatever it might be that you're looking for that out ball. And that's difficult, you know, because even I'm sure the midfield discussion would have been based around, say, Conor Hearn and what he offers. And now you have to go in there without him. And it's about finding the balance between all those various players. And it's very hard, like, really to, like, obviously, like, for example, the identity of your central striker will naturally be influenced by who you want to play as, say, the number 10 or the more advanced central midfielder. So you might have thought, okay, if you're someone like Collins who can hold the ball up, is Alan Brown running off him what you need? Whereas with Connolly, Robinson, do you need more of a, I don't know, creative option that can set them free? You know, there's a lot to consider for him, a serious amount of options to consider for him.
Yeah, it's hard to predict this team. Be curious, Dan, who are your definites? Who'll almost certainly start in Serbia beyond Mark Travers?
Good question. Right, Seamus Coleman, I think, will. Yeah. I think it's really is a given. And it's possible that Matt Doherty plays on the right side, but I wouldn't say that's a definite. You asked for definites. So I'd say Coleman's a definite. I'd say Kieran Clarke would be a definite. And then I think it's between Darrow Shea and Shane Duffy. Say Enda Stevens is a definite. There we go. I'd say Jeff Hendrick probably is now.
In fairness to Jeff Hendrick, again, if we're looking for positives, we saw a better Jeff Hendrick of late in an Irish jersey.
Yeah, he's had a bad time for Newcastle, but I think just with Heron being out, I just can't see him going with, say, I don't know, Cullen Malumbi, Alan Brown, or Cullen Jason Knight, Alan Brown, say, you know. I think they are the options, but I think Hendrick probably does play now, just maybe even a bit deeper.
Yeah.
So I'd say he's a definite. I honestly think beyond that, I'm not sure anyone else is a definite.
Aaron Connolly is just a case of where I presume is a definite.
I would expect him to be in the 11, presuming he's fit. Like, McLean, you mentioned, there's a bit of a doubt around him. I think if he was 100% fit, I think he'd be pretty strong chance of involvement. But I think there's a big question mark over whether he's able to play 90 minutes, say. So I think they are. Yeah, I think that's all we've got there.
What's your sense, Dan, of Robbie Brady, who kind of came back into a bit of form and fitness towards the end of last year? And, you know, there would have been a time post Euro 2016, Hendrick and Robbie Brady. Now, that feels increasingly like a long time ago. What's your sense on Brady, though? I'm thinking of technical players here with a bit of experience, too.
Yeah, and no, I think he's got a very good chance. I think he's an absolute search to get on the pitch during the game.
Yeah,
and you could and you could be right. Like it's possible that we'll see what happens with McLean. Like it's possible that Brady could sort of play off the left. You know that he's left sided. Like you see, you know, there's a sort of a debate over what they're going to expect from Serbia. Will they play three at the back, or not? What way are they going to approach it? Are you going to be in a situation where you're playing one of these teams where even if Ireland have a 4-2-3-1, that there's a danger that they're sort of overrunning midfield? So do you need like your two wide players, you know, in that 4-3-3 or whatever you want to call it? Do you need two that are, rather than being out and out wingers, that they're more comfortable coming in field to help out in that area, you know? And that's where maybe like Brady, you know, you see him involved. Like sometimes even someone like Jason Knight has played on the, for the 21s for Kenny, he actually played on the right, but actually more narrow, if you get me. And then the width came from the fullbacks. And you wonder, would you end up with something like that? You know, is that where you even see someone like Jason? I know I have a feeling it might be Matt Doherty doing that, but I'm basing that on a hunch, not basing that on information, I have to say. Like, yeah, you know, would have had some ideas previously on what they were thinking, but I think they've probably been overtaken by events to some degree. And I think now like all bets are off to some degree. This is just a hunch, it's not information. I definitely am coming around to the view that Robinson will probably be involved. I think, but again, he can play anywhere across the front three. And I think Collins was a start to start probably until he lost his place at Luton, and now I'm not so sure.
Okay. It's worth stating the team obviously met in Manchester on yesterday and they've departed for Serbia this afternoon. I presume they had a session earlier on today and they'll have a session tomorrow night at the stadium, and that's it. So really kind of two proper on-field sessions in so much as the one the night before the game is, and whatever they could do on Sunday, I'm sure not everybody was involved in whatever they did on Sunday. So the point I'm making is to expect some massive step forward on Wednesday based on the time Kenny has had with the team would be very unrealistic, or else those Zoom calls he's having with individuals go a long, long way. But that's the reality of what he's working with here. I mean, for one of the most important games of the campaign to come first up like this, I mean, he would have desperately loved to swap it with the Qatar one and have two games in the build-up to it.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think when the draw was made, I think it wasn't a bad draw, but the one thing that did stand out was this game being the first one. You know, that with everything that's happened in the last while, he probably needed a bit of a lead in. Now, listen, people will scream at us here and say, well, Serbia have a new manager. They're going to have two training sessions with their new manager before their first game. They do have a better hand, you know, in terms of players and form. But, I mean, in recent years, they've had good players and haven't necessarily delivered.
I suppose the one point I'd make on that, and I accept the point if people do text it in, of course it is the same for Serbia. You suspect Kenny is trying to make more of a shift in terms of approach than the Serbian manager is.
Yeah, no, I guess so. Like, I mean, it's more with their side. It's almost like, not quite an embarrassment to Richards, that's going to be overstating it, but they've actually got a lot of attacking players, but they haven't necessarily found the way to use them. Like, okay. I mean, Serbia did, you know, they did get knocked out of the Euros by Scotland.
Yeah.
You know, after 120 minutes at home. Now, they then hammered Russia 5-0 a couple of days later. They're a bit hot and cold. I know it's almost resorting to sort of cliche, but their recent history, they've qualified for like three World Cups in recent memories, but their Euros, you know, since Ireland last qualified for one, yet their Euros record is very patchy. Like they occasionally have dreadful campaigns. So it's sort of, there's an element of Jekyll and Hyde with them. But with Ireland, like there is, like there's obviously a dual strand to this. Like there's obviously the need to just try and have good results and be competitive, and the pressures that come with that, versus, you know, the need to try and, we are talking about a project of some description here, and trying to be true to that. And I think to some degree, I mean, okay, Kieran Westwood wasn't available, but there's obviously a sense with Kenny that if he's got marginal calls about stuff, it's probably better for him that if things are going to be difficult, that you try Travers, you know, you try, you know, you get Parrott involved, Jason Knight, and you have to balance it up against, well, we want these players to get experience of these type of games because that's going to stand to the future. But also, you can't just, you know, there will be people who won't be patient with Stephen Kenny if results remain bad. So there's obviously, like, you know, you have to balance both of those things. And I think we've touched on this before in the show. People will say, well, he just needs to get back to basics for the sake of it. But I'm not sure if people necessarily know what that means. You know, I'm not necessarily sure if he has the old dogs for the hard road and the squad that, like, in theory, you say, well, okay, you get all the bodies behind the ball on Wednesday and see what happens. Yeah. But I don't know if Ireland necessarily have an informed defence and, like, the absolute reliable big man that you can lump it up to actually execute the alternative game plan that people might call towards. And it may well be that the best way of getting a result, or the best chance of getting a result, is by trying to stick to some of the principles that Stephen Kenny is trying to introduce. But, like, that won't be palatable if it goes badly wrong. I guess what I'm saying, there's just no... I think a lot of managers would struggle with the hand going into this game. And I don't think he has, like, the safe conveyances there that absolutely guarantee you get a result by sort of playing in an uglier way, if you know what I mean.
I know what you mean, exactly.
That's the problem.
Yeah, no,
that's it's a real problem for me.
On paper, not been the greatest of build-ups, we can say that, so we'll see how things go. Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent. Cheers, Dan, appreciate that.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks a million. Our football coverage on Off the Ball is with thanks to Paddy Power, and we have a special tomorrow, by the way, building up to the game against Serbia. So it'll be on FM. If you're just an FM listener, then tune in tomorrow and you'll get all this stuff. But from 2 o'clock on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, the OTB Sports app, we have a preview with Gary Breen and Kevin Kilbane and Stephanie Roach. There'll be a crappy quiz. And Danny Murphy of Liverpool and other places is going to join us as well for an in-depth chat about his career. So that's all on the way tomorrow afternoon on our social channels, and then tomorrow evening on FM. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Only the cream of the crop pick up Champions League medals. Jonathan Greening's got one. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Now, you're welcome along to the football show. So later on, we're going to talk to Áine O'Gorman, Irish international. If you're listening on the radio and wondering about Ireland-Serbia talk, then podcast listeners will know. We had Dan McDonald on earlier on, so you can catch that up. In the meantime, with us now, Pat Nevin. Evening.
Good evening. How are you doing? Very well.
Lots to talk about. Very intriguingly, before I get to all of that, you said to JP just before coming on air, you've seen the perfect referee or something to that effect?
Yeah. Do you know, like, hate talking about VAR, as we all do, but being a supporter of it, I had supported it purely because I watched the NFL, the referees there. You know, they give the ideas, they give the judgment, they let everybody know, and it's very, very clear, and nobody argues with them. And I thought that's what you should do in football, right? And it's kind of not worked that way. But I don't know if you watched it, and I suppose many people in Ireland did, but the France v Wales game, the rugby game at the weekend there, and Luke Pearce, I think it was the referee there. And honestly, I sat there with my chin on the floor thinking, he's making that look really easy. And by the way, rugby rules are more complicated than football and they're more subjective than football. And you know what? You get on with it. The explanation. And you know, if he's got it wrong, you've explained why he's got it wrong. And I think it was Wayne Barnes who was talking to as well. And I sat there honestly thinking, can it be that difficult to do football in a very, very similar way to that? And the amount of people tell me, oh, it stops the flow of the game, there's no excitement. Tell me that with the flow of that game. It was absolutely extraordinary. Yes, it had to stop, but it's still an incredible game. Lots of people tell me now, my limited knowledge of all rugby rules, you know what I mean, and people argue all night long whether he got everything right between the two of them. But the way they clarified it, I was sitting talking to my wife during it, who probably knows more rugby than I do, but she said to me, that's just genius. We're talking about a brilliant game of rugby going on, and both of us are going, wow, what a referee. So could someone explain to me why football can't just get that idea and move it on to football from rugby? It's genius.
It's a very interesting question. Yeah, I was watching. So I'll park the Josh Adams try for a second, because I thought he was bizarrely sure that Adams had grounded the ball, even though Wayne Barnes
the hand underneath,
gritted teeth, was trying to say, well, look, if you're asking me for conclusive proof he didn't, I can't give you that. So if you're saying he definitely grounded it, go for it, kind of gritted teeth style. But the
argument was clear. The point was clear.
Yes, it was clear. The red card I thought was a perfect illustration of how, they step by step with brilliant communication walked towards the absolute correct decision. I mean, initially it was a try, and then Barnes alerted him to this moment, and then it was like, well, actually that could be a yellow card even, and then they talked some more and looked at it again, and I mean, by the end of their, what was it, 2-3-4 minutes maybe, they had reached the conclusion actually this was a red card. I mean, I guess the two things jump to mind where there's such a massive difference with football, and that is primarily we can hear what Barnes is saying. You know, in football, we are locked out of this conversation. We have a referee with his hand on his ear.
And that being my point, eventually we need to get there.
Mm.
The NFL, they put their hand on a button and they tell the crowd. They tell everyone.
Mm.
Everybody knows it and everybody understands it. And you get it. And many people will say, oh, well, football fans will never, learn how to do that or cope with that. Yeah, they will. Because people do. They learn to change. Mm. I thought it was brilliant. I quite like logic like that, and I think one of them's a barrister anyway, which kind of helps.
Wayne Barnes, yeah.
Exactly. So the logical progression of the arguments, I thought they were absolutely genius. So I've well done to them. To watch a game of any sport and at the end of it thinking, and a brilliant game,
yes.
An absolute brilliant game.
Yes.
And be thinking, damn, that referee's good.
Yes.
It's such an unusual thing.
There has been, and this is the second point I was going to throw to you, so it's quite interesting. I'm not sure what the law is that, when people are watching, it changes our behaviour. So, you and I are talking in a certain way now, and because we know people are watching, we're changing our behaviour in a way. So an interesting phenomenon in rugby has been that, and Wayne Barnes is one of the exceptions to the rule. Wayne Barnes, I know there's a football audience primarily here, but it's an interesting point anyway, I think. Wayne Barnes is one of the top referees in rugby anyway. He's very, very, very confident. And by all accounts, even within the refereeing position, he is an encyclopedia when it comes to the rules. So he is a confident TMO, to say the least, because he's often the referee. There has been a phenomenon, interestingly, Pat, in that the TMOs, and the feeling is because it's so public, because everyone is eavesdropping, the TMOs are reluctant to counter the referees. They don't want to embarrass the referees in some way. They don't want to say, oh, geez, you've got that completely wrong. Or they don't want to get into I totally disagree with you. I have to disagree with you. You've got that really wrong. He put, in this instance, he put his hand on his eyes. Now, Barnes did it beautifully. But we have seen some instances where, because it's so public, the TMOs have kind of been clenching their fists and grinding their teeth and not quite saying what they really think. And I presume that's one of the reasons it has remained private, those discussions private in football. So that's something to bear in mind. What we saw on Saturday in Paris were probably two of the best proponents of that technology, but there is a downside to going public.
Well, and I know lots of the downsides as well, because every line would be forensically picked apart.
Mm.
I mean, I noticed that a lot of that was picked apart, particularly by the Welsh afterwards, in the Welsh newspapers and online. I noticed that. I actually went and looked to see what the reaction would be, which was hilarious, because I think Pierce is actually born in Wales, so he's not going to cheat against them anyway. But it was the weirdest thing. I thought, well, actually, because you explained everything so clearly, and if it's wrong, at least you know the reasons why.
Mm.
So you might argue it's wrong, but you've already got the argument there. But, I understand not everyone's going to be as good. And that's why I put the point across. I think I've seen the perfect referees.
Yeah.
And you stick them in any situation, I think they could control it as well. But it was kind of joy to watch, and it kind of... And the other thing, just one last point on that, talk about knowing the rules. The referees in football generally have brilliant knowledge of the rules. They really have brilliant knowledge of the rules. Problem is, the rules change every 20 minutes and they throw the subjectivity in.
Mm.
And that's what kind of knackers it slightly. But I loved it. I mean, the whole thing was great. And considering it was just the build up to what was a great weekend of football, it was a pretty good start.
Yeah. And your initial point absolutely stands as well. I think you did say it. It is, look, perverse and everything to say it, but it is wonderful theatre. I mean, you're watching this high stakes conversation. I mean, don't tell me that's dull.
No, it wasn't. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, even certain wording and things like that. So one of the French players said, are you sure that's a sending off? And he just looked at it witheringly, but politely. Yes.
Mm.
just carried on. No anger, no nothing.
Yeah. I wonder, will football go there, do you think? Will we be able to hear the VAR conversation?
I'd like to try it. I'd like to try it. Mm. You try it with some of the best ones, just for a while, just to see if it works. So there's things that work in football work well when they're trialed, not when they're thrown in halfway through a season and everyone has to react. They don't work well like that. They work well when you trial them for periods of time. And there's many things over the years, we forget about it. But lots of things have been trialed, you know, and, you know, pass back rule, go back all the way to that. That changed. They trialed it first. You trial these things, see how they work, and then you move on.
Yeah. Might start with the FA Cup, then semi-final lineups confirmed. Leicester against Southampton and Man City against Chelsea. Leicester's 3-1 hammering of Manchester United generating the most headlines. It was 1-1 at the break, but United were lucky to be 1-1. And then Leicester kicked on. Much confusion, I think, amongst Manchester United fans that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer made a point of resting some of his top players ahead of the international break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's surprising to everyone, really, because if you're looking at it just now, surely he must be fairly confident he's going to get top four. I mean, that's what it's all about with them, top four. You know, they need to get that. And they've got a decent enough cushion. It's not a total cushion, but you think he should have been going for that, because silverware would be phenomenal for them at any point. FA Cup would be amazing for them. And they need that. They're like, you know, the top clubs, the Liverpools, the Chelsea's, the Arsenal's, they expect to get silverware fairly frequently. I'm not saying he threw it away. He didn't throw it away, but that wasn't his first team. Now, if you're Manchester City, you can do it because you have got other things. You can't take too many chances. And by the way, they threw on a whole bunch of players late on to try to make sure they got the game won. But I would agree with you. It was a slight surprise. And I think he got it wrong. Having said that, it's Leicester City. It was away from home. And Leicester are pretty good at the moment. You know, the first team players of the first 11 might not have won it anyway. But it was, I thought it was a big surprise. I think it was a mistake because, you know, trophies are expected. They ain't going to win the league, you know. So that was your chance there. And I think they blew the chance. I have to say, I struggled to see the logic in that one.
Mm, that's twice now it's really backfired on Solskjaer, resting players, that is. He rested a bunch against Sheffield United when they had Arsenal away the following Sunday. And they lost, and that really halted their momentum back when they were top of the table in January, and now it's happened here again. He cited the Milan game and said they were tired, and so he figured it was the right thing to do, but
You could be right. We always think on a game-to-game basis, and they're thinking it in blocks of games. Mm. And they are playing a game. Almost all the teams are playing a game every 3.5 days. It's averaging out at that at the moment. And a lot of them are high-intensity games, and a lot of them are a wee bit tighter together than they're used to. And yes, I was at Manchester United when they played against Crystal Palace, and it was the worst game I've seen this season. Mm. And the players were completely out of it. And I would have rested 3 or 4 of them, including Rashford, including Bruno Fernandes as well, after that game, because they were wiped out. So there's a bit of he's seeing it in training. He's getting the medical reports as well. You know, on the face of it, it looked like an error, but he will have a bit more information than most of us would have. And in this season of all seasons, you know, and they had to do the Milan, they had to go for the Milan game, and something's going to fall. It's eventually, they'll all make mistakes. I mean, most of the coaches just now are trying to do as well as they possibly can to keep the players A, fit, B, you know, certainly sharp. And it's impossible for most of them. The vast majority, it's just impossible. I mean, we've watched Liverpool fall. And I've watched Manchester United having dips as well, but I suppose they're near the top of the league, or as high as they could possibly be behind Manchester City. So it's not that bad, really. Mm. But I have to say, if I was a United fan, I'd be a bit miffed because, you know, which would you have wanted, really? I think the FA Cup was the real possibility.
Oh, they're definitely miffed. They are definitely miffed. Leicester, by the way, without James Maddison, without Harvey Barnes, without James Justin, like, they whooped United. It was a, you know, thoroughly convincing, dominating performance on Leicester's part. They were just by far the better team.
And you wonder, like, what Brendan's done, because he had a real period there. Even you talk about those guys that are injured just now, but he had a period before that where he had a lot of players injured as well. And, you know, he still seemed to have managed it. He managed to keep on going. And they had a their period in the Europa League, wasn't it, that they went to as well. So they've been stressed this season as well. So that's not, you know, the excuse that they don't have like European games. They've had that as well. So Brendan's done an amazing job. It does help when certain players turn up on the day and just go through a bit of form that's a bit spectacular. And they are having that just now. They are having goal scorings coming from places they possibly didn't expect. And players that maybe you're thinking, are they good enough really? They've all stepped up and they look fantastic just now. So once again, the way they are playing just now, you wouldn't be surprised if they kept on going up to the end of the season. They were one of the ones that were the top three. But and of course, they've got the draw that they absolutely wanted. I don't think there's any argument about that. Everyone, wherever you go, whatever the tournament, I think everyone's thinking the same thing. And I know Carlo Ancelotti feels that. Nobody wants City. Absolutely nobody wants City. And I was covering the game the other week there against Mönchengladbach. And it was extra special. It was really, really special. Mm. And it doesn't seem to make that much of a difference, you know, if they make four or five changes either. It still seems that extra special.
Now, Xabi Alonso's Mönchengladbach. Interesting, if you didn't hear that news, he's taken over there. On United, Van de Beek got a rare start, and his dummy for the Greenwood goal was a rare good moment, because otherwise he was pretty anonymous. This isn't working out. Maybe it's harsh to expect too much from somebody who doesn't have a flow of games and, you know, probably isn't fully match sharp as they would like to be, but it's his lot that he has to take these opportunities. It's not working out here at all.
It's not. He is still quite young. The other thing about him is, what would his favourite position be? Well, it's standing exactly where Bruno Fernandes is standing. I would suspect that would be his most favourite position. The other thing is, I think he's a player that, you know, everything, a lot of stuff will go through him when he's, you know, on form and he's the main man in the team. It's an amazing amount of one of the main men. It certainly was the case beforehand. And I think it's a bit like that with certain players. You go to a club and remember the same thing happened with Zaha at United. You know, a wonderful, fabulous, great player, but you need to be the main man. You know, if you're not the main man and you're a peripheral and you're only getting little bits here and there, you won't look as good. Mm. And Van de Beek, it does seem as if he's going to be peripheral, whatever he does, because obviously Fernandes has had such a brilliant time in that period that he's been there. And that's a tough gig for him. I feel sorry for him. But again, there's a lot of players that have, you know, come, and it does take a year. We do want to make decisions on them very early. But just some, it takes a year. It takes a season to... We know this story back to front. It's getting used to the players you're playing against, the style of the football, the new management, the new place to live. All that stuff stuck together. And of course, you're thrown in, you know, a pandemic on top of that. For some people, it's a piece of cake. They just cruise through it and don't think. But for some people, it's tough. He certainly deserves, to the start of next season, to have a right good look at him. Because he might... You know, there's a couple of people recently. We've talked about John Stones. Suddenly, flourish. Mm. You know, Christensen down at Chelsea. Sudden flourish. And you kind of didn't see it to that level. And it absolutely can happen. And there's a few... And there's quite a few obvious ones around that you kind of expect it to happen with them as well. And you just don't know, but Van de Beek, he may well be one of them. I'm not 100% sure. The dummy was great. I did notice that a number of the press comments were of the great play from Pogba on the left. And I'm thinking, that was a rubbish cross. It's just a great dummy.
Yeah. I think we're just relieved Pogba made a run. You know, he should be doing that non-stop the whole time. He won lots of plaudits for his performance in Milan, and then against Leicester, just wasn't there.
Yeah, but actually, Milan one was interesting, because he just looked at me and thought, you look at home here. Mm. We're bestriding the pitch. You know, he's doing that movement where he looks sort of bigger than everybody else. Mm. And it's the thing we've gone on about forever and ever about Paul Pogba. You know, he doesn't get a game for Man United all the time. There is a reason for that, because he doesn't do that all the time. And it's, you know, I keep on doing that thing I told you I mentioned to everyone a while back. Just watch what he does after he plays his pass. Always watch him. You know, does he move? And if he moves after his pass, then he's having his day. He's having one of his good days. If he passes it and watches it or jogs with that kind of lazy jog, waste of time. Mm. You might as well get somebody like McTominay who'll go and do some work for you.
Solskjaer agreed with you after about 64 minutes because he made that substitution. Pogba off, Telles off, Matic off, Van de Beek off. He brought on Fernandes, Shaw, Cavani, McTominay, but the game was largely gone at that stage. So that's United out of the FA Cup, and he's left with the Europa League. As for Spurs, Pat, they are out of the Europa League. Still reeling, if you listen to the various interviews, even after their win against Aston Villa. They were 2-0 winners against Villa. Vinicius and Harry Kane with the goals. Interestingly, David Ornstein, who covers Spurs for The Athletic and obviously has good contacts there, has made some news. He said, "I speak to a lot of people in football. The consensus is now that Harry Kane would like to leave Tottenham. He can't say that publicly. He's the captain. He's very committed while he's at the club, but he wants to go and win trophies." Now, unfortunately for Kane, he signed a six-year deal, which takes him through to 2024, and it seems Daniel Levy would want $120 million minimum, and no better man to stick to what he wants as a minimum. But this is an interesting development now. That it's out in the ether that Harry Kane, Mr. Spurs, actually wants to leave, and I suspect David Ornstein is right. Kane will not say it. And he's not the type of player who'll down tools. He's not going to make this very, very ugly. But this isn't good. This really isn't good.
No, it's not good for Spurs. But the other side of it is they have had him for a long time, and he has done a brilliant job. In reality, Spurs fans won't complain. Well, they'll complain about it. They'll be upset about it, but they'll absolutely understand it. You only get one career. I mean, is he 28 now? Mm. I mean, he is at that age. This is it. This is the last chance of making the big move where, you know, you can have 3 or 4 years at a really top club. And, you know, is there anyone who wouldn't take him? I think everyone would.
For 120 million plus?
Is who can afford them? That's really the question. Maybe Bayern Munich won't, because they, you know, they're happy where they are and the direction they're going. But would the Spanish giants take them? They would if they could afford them. I wouldn't be surprised if PSG, if they could afford them, they would take them too, which they probably can. The more annoying ones for Spurs fans, yeah, Chelsea would take them, but I don't think he would go. Man United would take them in a heartbeat. And it would be wonderful for them. Liverpool, similar, phenomenal. But if Man City don't get Haaland, Harry would be amazing for Manchester City because of the intelligence of his play. So you look around, who can afford them? Well, yeah, maybe a few people can afford them. Maybe if anyone, whoever can afford them, wants them, I would guess.
Mm.
And that's the problem Spurs have got and the happy situation that Harry Kane's got. And it's, I mean, for a long time, you always want people to stay in, you know, the club they love and all that sort of thing, but it's only one career. And I think when you've done 4, 5, 6 years at a club, you've done your bit.
Mm.
You know, he's delivered time and time and time and time again. And if he made it clear that he wanted to go and someone came up with that money, I think it'd be very, very harsh for anyone to have a dig at him. I just don't think many people would.
Where it would leave Spurs if he left would be pretty grim, to be honest.
They thought that'd be Bale, didn't they? They thought that'd be Bale.
Mm. This feels different, though, doesn't it?
It does now, but remember, Bale was so important. He was so stunningly important to Spurs. And to be fair, the money they spent, the Bale money wasn't spent that wisely originally. And there was a lot of waste that was wasted. So the situation is, if Harry does go, they really need to work hard on what they do with that money. Problem is, if someone gives you 120 million quid, suddenly that player that was 20, 25 is now 40. And that's just the way of the world. That's just the way it is. But that's the big thing. If it does go, it's the imperative that they can use at least some of that money really wisely. And they should be looking at that right now in case it happens.
On the Kane penalty, Gary Neville, I'm talking about Harry Kane, obviously, called it cute and wily. Now, other people have called it lots of other things. If people didn't see this, it was Kane, effectively, he was on the end line and he didn't play the ball. I mean, he let it run out of play. If Matty Cash had managed to pull out in time or not dive in at all, I guess Kane was pretty certain he was going to dive in to some extent or other, then it would have looked like a bizarre ploy to just let the ball go out of play. Did this rankle with you? Was this crossing the line into cynicism and beyond, or was it perfectly good, clever, smart play?
Do you know what? I get too wrapped up in the defender being daft. What are you doing that for? Mm. Why are you diving in like that? He's not getting there. Just stay on your feet. The old phrase, stay on your feet, there's money in the game. There's no point whatsoever to do that. And I was so involved in saying, why do you do that at that situation? I mean, first of all, I thought he was off the pitch. when the actual contact happened, which made me, my brain get confused. I'm thinking, actually, he's off the pitch. Is that a penalty or not? Because he's off the pitch. And it probably would have been, but that was going to confuse me. But I think it was actually just on the line when some of the contact actually happened. I don't think that was a ridiculous dive. I don't.
Okay.
And I think, you know me, I'm hard on the divers out there. I don't think that was one of the bad ones. I've seen plenty of other ones that have been a million times worse than that.
I had noted in a couple of recent conversations with different journalists on with us or with yourself that Jose had seemed to be less critical of the players during their slump there, as opposed to previous years when things weren't going well for Mourinho. That's starting to turn now. He's starting to get a bit miffed at the situation. Hugo Lloris, after their defeat on Thursday, did like a 7-8 minute interview on BT Sport, which was really worrying if you're a Spurs fan, because he talked about too many players talking the talk, not walking the walk. Something slightly rotten in the dressing room was the overall impression you were left with, and players not pulling their weight day in, day out of training and so on. And then Mourinho picked up on that theme even last night after the win against Villa. He talked about the selfishness which is around, and he used the word selfishness. He said individual interests are around, the agents are around, the connections between the agents and the press are around. So he said to build a strong collective and a strong dressing room, nowadays you need time, because society and the psychological profile of younger players is not an easy one. In effect, he was kind of saying, yeah, not everything is great in here. And he said Thursday's scar will not heal for a long time. They still only are 3 points behind Chelsea, who are in fourth. Like, there's still so much to play for here with Spurs, but the various signpostings from the likes of Mourinho and Lloris suggest they're kicking quite hard beneath the water.
I'm really intrigued. I mean, we can't know for sure, but who's he aiming that towards? You know, that comment about, you know, agents. I mean, you immediately think, is it Dele Alli? I mean, he plays in that game, you know, and you know the player he has been in the past, and he has been so, so peripheral. I mean, as in distant from the team. But it's not just one, you know, it's more than that. Now, I don't know if it's Dele Alli. I have no idea.
Mm.
But, you know, as he says, young players, and, you know, he's been sidelined a few times as well. But he surely can't be one person he's aiming that at. So he must be disappointed at a number of them not putting it in. In Mourinho of the past, his personality was big enough and strong enough, and because classically he used to win all the time. And when all his teams are winning, if Spurs were winning all the time, you won't hear any of this, none of it at all. It just won't happen. Whereas as soon as you get any problems, that's when this sort of stuff leaks out a little bit. I'm intrigued by that, but it's not absolutely new from Mourinho. He goes through those periods. And everyone will turn it on him, saying he's either too soft on them or sometimes he's too hard on them. None of it really matters. All he's doing is trying to manipulate situations so he can get the best out of people. And he will try every single different type of situation. I've watched him do every single one of them. You know, everyone says, you know, the arm round, the kick up, the backside, the two different, well, there's about 40 different ones with Mourinho. And he'll try them all. And he does sometimes look at his wit's end. I think he just knows there's a right good attacking force that he's got. You know, when Son's fit, you know, he's got Kane there. I mean, even the other ones that will come in will look good, but, you know, if he can get Bale there all the time, if Lamella was not getting sent off and shouldn't be doing so, I think there's enough quality there going forward for his team to just about squeeze into the top four. But it needs everybody as a group, everyone as a team. And that's the thing about Mourinho. When he's at his best, he just gels that group really, really tight. But when it splinters, it just explodes. And the fear you've got if you're a Spurs fan is that if there is tension, it's beginning to leak out.
Mm.
It doesn't leak out the day it happens. It leaks out a long time after it starts. It takes a long time for these things to leak out. You know, there is a problem for a while because he'll have tried to fix it.
Mm.
And it's kind of saddening, really, because there is enough quality there. And if Jose did go, which wouldn't be a shock, because he's never quite got the defence the way he wants it, which is the base of what Jose was always best at. If he goes before he gets that sorted out, because he's not had long enough there to get the individuals in, it'll be a wee bit of a shame for Spurs, because they never found out what he could have done for them. So I would hope that he stays on for at least another season. And just the thought, what if Harry did leave? and then he had the money and he was allowed to get what he thought was the right stuff in. That would be intriguing. That would be very interesting indeed. It's not the way football usually works. It usually works with, if you don't get top four or a trophy, then you get hoofed. And that's the way it is. But I would be very intrigued to, because he's due a kind of real period of time with a team that he can really build. And we know he's capable of doing it. Well, he was. We suspect he might still be. But we won't know until he gets that time stroke money.
Before you go, you were at the Old Firm game, a 1-1 draw in attendance. That must have been rather strange.
Yeah, it's the second one I've done. And the other one was shocking because Rangers won it so stunningly easily. But it is an odd scenario. Walking into the game, you know, it's a drive-in, you park inside it, which you usually don't get to do anyway because it's mobbed. And the place was buzzing outside with photographers, not with anyone else, just photographers, looking for Celtic and Rangers fans for trouble. And there was none at all. Honestly, there must have been about 50 photographers with these big telephoto lenses looking for trouble, and there wasn't any to be found anywhere. But the game is intriguing in its own way. You know that Celtic have got quite a lot to do. But I'm sure you know about it far more than I do, but the big story is that, you know, Roy Keane is the favourite at the moment, you know, and he seems very, very positive about it himself. The problem he's got is there is a decent-sized rebuild there. I mean, that team's been built around Scotty Brown for a long time. They've got some very talented players going forward. But are they a team that's structured enough and organised enough to take on Steven Gerrard's Rangers? Well, at the moment, they're a long way behind it, and there's a decent amount of work. The more I've thought about it over the last while, because I've considered quite a lot of people for this and think, Roy would be able to use his contacts really well, I think. I think the players that he could get in, and it's probably only three or four, if he gets three or four that are good quality, and some of them might even be loan, you know, from England, because he's got the contacts, it may well be, unless, of course, he's fallen out with absolutely everyone by then, but it may well be that he is the right guy to get this job. And I mean, how much fun will it be?
Well, a lot of fun. What were you hearing at the club over the weekend? Does it seem like he's a very justified favourite to get this job?
It's just whispers. I mean, you're just guessing. I mean, it really is whispers. I mean, they love the guy who's there, John Kennedy. And he had a very good technical and tactical game. In fact, he beat Steven Gerrard tactically on the night. Now, Rangers were a bit tired. They played a European game. They had lots of problems during the week with all the racist stuff that was happening, which was horrendous for them. And they did look a little bit jaded. But a couple of tactical things that he did. Now, considering, you know, Lennon's last game at Celtic Park against Rangers, he was absolutely outthought in that game completely. Whereas John Kennedy comes in and does a really good job. And Steven Gerrard, which is a very tactical thing about what was happening on the right-hand side of the Rangers' defensive area. And there was obviously a weakness. And they flooded it brilliantly. And they overrun it brilliantly. And they kept on doing it. And Steven Gerrard had to make two changes, one just after half-time, one 15, 20 minutes later, or else his team, you would have got hammered. And to be honest, they almost were with the chances that were created. But it was really well done that John Kennedy seen where the weakness was, knew where the weakness would be, and absolutely dived in there. So, you know, he's not done himself any harm at all. But when Steven Gerrard's at the other side of the city, you just know they're going to try and get a big name. You just know they are. There's nothing surer in this world than that's going to happen.
It'd be box office. On the racism point, I was reading, I didn't see much of this, but against, it was Slavia Prague. And for instance, Glenn Kamara claims he was branded an effing monkey by one of the defenders, you know, on the pitch. And I saw Scott Brown, was it just before kickoff, Paddy? He walked into the Rangers half and put his arm around Kamara and they had a bit of a chat, which sounds like a really classy touch.
That's gigantic for an Old Firm game.
I would have thought so. Yeah, that's why, but extra kind of resonance to it.
Oh, amazing. And by the way, being Scott Brown as well. I mean, the absolute demon in the eyes of the Rangers fans. I mean, to me, part of the fun of Celtic Rangers games for quite a few years now has been just watching Morelos versus Brown. You know, lump each other, kick each other, elbow, you name it. the whole game through. It's a lovely little sideshow that's great fun, right? Pure pantomime, but great. Mm. And both of them are the pantomime villains of either team for the opposition. But for Scotty to walk over and do that, it was class. You're absolutely right. It was class. It was the right thing to do. It wasn't done for show. It was nothing got to do with that. And you don't see that many nice moments in old film games, but it was a brilliant moment. And, you know, looking at all the players before the game, they didn't take the knee. They stood just to make the underline the point of what, you know, what they'd actually seen. And also, going back, I don't know if you heard, and if anyone who hasn't heard this, it's not funny, but it's very close to being funny. You said what the guy said, he called him effing monkey, right?
Mm.
And this guy has claimed, now we weren't there, and nobody else has heard, obviously, except the two people involved. He said, no, I called him an effing guy. What? What planet do you say that phrase?
Mm.
I mean, honestly, you got to come up with better than that, mate. That's garbage. Honestly, I think if he had a chance of getting off with it, because UEFA, you said it was only one person hearing, as soon as he uttered that phrase, I think, throw the book at him. Mm. Absolutely, throw the book at him.
On that note, we will talk to you, Pat. Thanks so much.
Look forward to it.
Cheers. See you soon. Pat Nevin there with us every Monday. Anya O'Gorman on the way next.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Only the cream of the crop pick up Champions League medals. Jonathan Greening's got one. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Now, very happy to say we're joined by Irish international P-Man player as well, Anya O'Gorman. She's putting her weight behind a brilliant initiative, really, because I guess with the pandemic, it's been tough for people to get out and about and do what they'd usually want to do, not least when it comes to football. So they're launching the 2021 Aviva Soccer Sisters Virtual Skills Hub. So basically what's happened here is that Aviva Ireland and the FAI have launched Aviva Soccer Sisters Virtual Skills Hub. It's as part of the Aviva Safe to Dream Team campaign. So the program is going to roll out specifically designed skills for girls to take part in during the upcoming Easter break. So basically these are free online skills. It's a series, will be rolled out daily throughout the week commencing March 29th. And if you want to look at the various videos, then go to aviva.ie/safe to dream team. So aviva.ie/safe to dream team. Anya O'Gorman, you're very welcome. How are you doing?
Hi, how are you, Joe? Good, yeah. And yourself?
Very well. You'd have loved something like that growing up, I suspect.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I think it's the Aviva Soccer Sisters is a great initiative just to get girls involved in football, just to find a love for the game, make new friends, learn new skills. So yeah, it's a great opportunity and something that wasn't around when I was growing up.
I'll bet. Are you involved in this? Are people tuning in to see what O'Gorman's got?
Yeah, so I do a couple of skills, yeah, throughout the week. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they all unfold and everyone sending in their videos to see if you can show me up.
Okay, no pressure, no pressure. What's your go-to? What's your speciality?
go-to skill, I don't know, like there's a really tough one on day two, so you can check that one out and see how it goes.
I think it's
I'm not gonna let all the secrets out now.
No, that's fair enough. I think it's a good thing as well that we're encouraging skill in Irish football, because I think as a country down the years we have, you know, honesty of effort and hard work, and not to say we haven't produced lots of brilliant skillful footballers, but maybe it's not always a point of emphasis in comparison with other countries. So a bit of skill to go along with the hard work, I'm all for.
Yeah, I think so. I think obviously we're typically Irish. Yeah. We kind of play in our emotions and a lot of hard work and desire. That's just inbuilt in us, I suppose, as well. So yeah, it's really good to look back on the skills and the technical ability and try getting girls working on that while they're a little bit younger, and it'll definitely stand them throughout their career.
Yeah, for sure. Interesting part of the year for you. So the league gets underway, weekend coming. Nice easy trip away to Wexford to get things started.
Yeah. So it's a tough start to the season for us. I think be glad to get the first game going. I suppose pre-season always feels a little bit long and sometimes tough, and playing a lot of friendly games and stuff, but you can't beat the competitive games with 3 points at the end of them. So yeah, really, really excited, and preparation's been going well for the whole squad.
Has it? Yeah. So COVID hasn't impacted on prep too much?
No, not yet. Touch wood. Like I think we're all pretty good. There's strict protocols in place up in the club as well, and we all adhere to them. So we've been fortunate enough so far, and hopefully it doesn't play havoc on the season going forward.
How's the body feeling this stage? Your veteran status, whether you like it or not, which is a good thing. It's a good thing. Are you still feeling free?
No, I feel good. I think sometimes maybe when I'm doing it, I'm all right. It might just take me a little bit longer than it used to when I was younger. We're recovering from what used to. Remember, when I was 16, playing in the international team, and I'd be bopping away, not a bother. I mean, it's like, Ani, it's all ahead of you now. So that's the line I give to the other guys. It's grand. I live down near the sea, so I jump in and out of that as well, and it helps the body recover and go again. So,
all good. Yeah, that sea swimming's been a lifeline to a lot of people the past year.
Yeah, I think so. I think it obviously has a lot of positives. And to be honest, I only started getting in maybe at the end of February, start of March. I'm not that hardcore. Jump in and out and off you go. You definitely feel the benefits and refresh after that.
You mentioned there in the international side at 16. It's a bit mad when you think back how long you've been on the go, isn't it? 100 plus caps. Pretty extraordinary when you take a moment to reflect.
Yeah, I think so. And I think you only start reflecting, I suppose, when you get a little bit older, with my veteran status, as you call it. I think when you're younger and you're a young kid, you just kind of all take it in your stride, don't you? You just, it's always on to the next game, the next competition. How can I get better? How can I improve? Challenge myself. So yeah, I think it's only when you get a little bit older, that's still in me, obviously, to improve and get better and challenge. But you look back and probably appreciate how young you were at the time when you look at the young girls coming through now and appreciate what I suppose your parents did for you and how they supported you getting you to football and presenting you with the opportunities.
They say never go back. You did step away from international football and then went back, but I suspect it's not a decision you regret.
No, I think at the time when I retired, I was happy with my decision at the time. And obviously, maybe the break did me good and just refreshed and restarted. And when the opportunity came around again, I think I had to grab it with two hands. I would regret it probably for the rest of my life. So, yeah, I'm happy to be back. It feels like I never left, to be honest. So, looking forward to the campaign. Obviously, didn't go quite according to plan and we didn't qualify for that major tournament. But look, we're looking forward to regrouping now and preparing for the next campaign.
So over the summer when the Euros are on, are you going to be, well, you might be doing some punditry work, I guess, but part of you will just be, you know, kicking the nearest object as you're watching teams play in that championship. Because, I mean, the way Ireland started the campaign, you really looked like in a great position for so long.
Yeah, I think so. And I think we probably just slipped away. And we can look back and I suppose learn from them games that we should have won, and maybe just them pressure games and how we're going to handle them going forward. And that's a massive learning curve. So when we're in this situation going forward, we can learn to deal and handle with that as well. And I suppose you have to take the positives as well. There's been a lot of positives throughout this campaign, and obviously being here in the backroom staff and the management team are staying on, so that will give us some continuity and momentum going into the next campaign.
Yeah. Experience is that weird thing, isn't it? I don't doubt it's very important, and you're talking there about what you learn from those pressure games. It's kind of probably hard to even explain or verbalize what it is. Maybe you just have to go through those moments and they do benefit you in curious ways down the line. Who knows?
Yeah, I think so. I think you just have to try and learn, I suppose, from the hard times, and makes you stronger and you get over it, and how you overcome them difficult periods and times in your career as well, I suppose, sometimes makes you stronger and can make you better as well. But I think it's important just to reflect on the positives as well and bring them into the next campaign.
So how are P-Mount set up then to defend their title? Obviously, things have been very good there of late. You're clearly enjoying your football there. More of the same would be good. What's the story with the league at the moment? Is it in a good place? Is it getting stronger? Obviously, the Airtricity have come in as a sponsor now, which looks like a great development. Your sense of where Irish football is domestically at club level for Irish women?
Yeah, look, I think obviously this year, we're 10 years into the season, and it's obviously great to have the likes of Electricity on board, to share the sponsorship with the Men's League of Ireland, and just to show parity across the board. And I think the promotion of the league today has been better. And I think it always comes back to us as players, I suppose, that we need to have a professional mindset and demand the best out of each other. And that when we go out and play, we can deliver on the pitch and put performances in and make an entertaining and competitive league, a league to watch as well. And from PML point of view, we're under no illusions. This could be our toughest season to date, you know, to retain the title again, and everyone's going to be out together. So we have to be at the top of our game week in, week out.
How's the standard at the moment, Anya? Is it going in the right direction, do you feel?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, there's an under-17s and 19s underage national league now as well. And I suppose them young players coming through now are coming to fruition, and got a lot of young good players in the likes of Athlone. Even in Wex, we've got a lot of young good players as well. So that's really positive for the league that that these clubs are like the bottom four teams that finished bottom last year are improving all the time, and they're getting more competitive. I suppose they're being tactically more aware, and they're setting up better against the opposition. They're definitely more difficult to beat than they have been in the past. So that's a massive plus as well. So look, I think the platform's there now to drive the league on and push forward as well. So I think just professionalise everything around the game, set up some clubs, standards, and who knows, then hopefully we can go and make the step into semi-professional and then full-time football.
Yeah, that's the big conversation at the moment, semi-professionalism as the next step. It's probably hard to predict how close that is.
Yeah, I think it's difficult at the moment. You know, I think there's still a little bit more groundwork that'll have to go in. But look, we're definitely in a good place. And I suppose there's more media getting behind the game as well. They're all welcome pressures with the LOI TV, all the games being streamed for free and that as well. So that gives us good exposure. And hopefully then when the crowds can come back in, we'll get more fans into the stadiums and we can just build the game from there. But it always comes back to the player that we're at a good standard and that we're making the game competitive and a good watch as well.
It's interesting you say tactically things are changing. What kind of changes would we see tactically, say, as opposed to 5-10 years ago in the game?
Like, I just think teams are more tactically aware, doing analysis, like all the games are recorded, they go up and huddle, they'll be reviewed, so everyone's a bit more tuned in and how the team set up their systems of play, and the teams all have good coaches and good managers in there as well. So that definitely helps and push the game forward, that the young players coming through can grow and develop.
Yeah. So I guess in terms of life away from P-Mount, so you guys have to earn a living as well. Was I reading your fitness trainer?
Yeah.
So are you doing, has Zoom become your life, or can you do the odd small class outdoor, or what's it been like?
Yeah, Zoomed out. like us all.
Like us all.
Yeah, so I'm on Zoom at the moment. So look, it is what it is at the moment. I suppose it's unfortunate that I can still take some of my clients online on Zoom and stuff like that. But like everyone, it's finding hard, difficult to get out and about. But I suppose the good weather's kind of helping us now just to get out and move and get some fresh air. And the benefits for our physical and mental health are so important. And I know people are getting fed up, but look, hopefully there is some light coming at the end of the tunnel. So yeah, it's been a difficult period for everyone, I suppose. And I'm fortunate enough that we were allowed to go back playing football. So really appreciate that.
We had Professor Niall Moyna on a couple of weeks ago, and he was just doing a piece on, you know, the various things you should be able to do at a certain age, like how many press-ups you should be able to do if you're male or female, a certain age, or, you know, squats off a chair without using your hands, all that stuff. And honestly, the response we got was insane. And just the overwhelming response from people was, oh my God, I'm so unfit. You know, it was like a wake-up call for a lot of people. So what type of people are you seeing coming to you then? I guess you've got all sorts, people who probably haven't done anything for years and want to try and get going again.
Yeah, so I'd have quite a range. Like, you have some young sports people coming in, some runners coming back from injury, strength and conditioning runners, some just key fitters, some older clients as well, just need to move and stay active as well. So I actually enjoy the range as well, because obviously quite interested in strength and conditioning, but I know the benefits that exercise can have for everyone and myself as well. I suppose even during the lockdown, everyone's a little bit more sedentary because you're not going out and about, even the little things you wouldn't notice before. I suppose if you look at your steps on your watch as well, you can just, on your Fitbit, that you can notice that maybe you just don't move. So it's just being subconscious, I suppose, to get out and get moving.
Yeah. So are you full on in these classes? Like, could you be doing 4 or 5 classes a day, hopping around Joe Wicks style, and then have to go training with P-Mount?
So I have to get, you know, the way I'm a veteran now.
Yeah.
You have to get a bit clever, you know, you can just coach.
Okay. See, that's the benefit of experience, you know.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, like during the last lockdown with the female team, we did quite a lot of Zoom. They all hate burpees now because of me. But I used to love that, bouncing around. So I will join in the odd session here and there, and keep myself moving too is important.
Yeah. How much longer will you? And by the way, I feel I've offended you with the veteran. You're a veteran, as in you have 100 plus caps for Ireland. That's elite company. I'm certainly not trying to retire you anytime yet. You probably still, you've got 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years left easily, do you?
That might be optimistic. I don't know. Look, I'll just take it year by year. We'll campaign by campaign, and we'll see how we go. Hopefully, we'll get the Women's National League we'll bash this year. A bit of unfinished business to do in Europe as well this summer, and then World Cup qualifiers to look forward to. So we'll just see how it goes, I suppose. Mm.
Yeah, it would be a lovely thing for you, I suspect, to get to a World Cup. I mean, if that, you know, as a sort of finale to your career, that must be just such a huge ambition. Because when watching the end of the campaign, RTE were doing their punditry, and Stephanie Roach was on. And she, you know, they were accentuating the positives, which is all good and proper. But Stephanie was sort of saying as well, yeah, I've sort of been saying that for about 10 years. I'm a bit sick of saying, oh, we can take positives. Like, can we just get to one of these things soon?
Yeah, the hard luck story, I suppose. I think that's a dream when you put on the Irish jersey that you want to go play in European Championship or a World Cup. And that's the next step, I think, that will really drive women's football to the next level in the country as well. And everything else, the environment now is there for that to happen. That I think the players are there. There's a really good mix of youth and experience as well. So, yeah, hopefully it's no more hard luck stories, and then it's on to the next level. Like, the closest we've came is 2008, when we played in a playoff against Iceland for the Euros. And we obviously never qualified in the end, but that's the closest. So, yeah, hopefully, look, the time has come now, I think, to take it to the next step.
Yeah, I think the country's waiting for that big bandwagon moment, aren't they?
Yeah. And hopefully we'll get all the best supporters in the world behind us in Ireland.
It'd be good. So listen, if anyone wants to check out, this is a brilliant initiative, really. So this is running across the Easter break. Aviva Ireland at the FAI, they've launched the Aviva Soccer Sisters Virtual Skills Hub. And basically, it's for skills for girls to take part in during the Easter break. So it's free. It's online. It starts from March 29th. aviva.ie/safe2dreamteam is the address. And Anya O'Gorman apparently is going to do some unbelievable skills on day two is what we're hearing.
I don't know about that now, but we'll give it a whack. And can I just add there as well, this year, for the first time, Football for All, the FAI Football for All programme got involved. So the skills are adapted for anyone that has additional needs as well. So it's all inclusive, so everyone can get involved.
Brilliant. Great. Listen, that sounds like an absolutely great initiative. Anya, we'll let you go. I know you're busy. Lots going on. Yeah. Best of luck at the weekend and for the season ahead. And we'll talk to you, I'm sure, when international football rolls out again. Anya O'Gorman, thanks so much.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Only the cream of the crop pick up Champions League medals. Jonathan Greening's got one. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.